My name's Paul Herbert, and I'm head of TMT at Goodman Derrick LLP. I'm presenting this TMT webinar on the subject of audiovisual media regulation. So, in this webinar, I'll be reviewing the regime introduced by the various ADMS directives, covering the regulation of television broadcasting services, on-demand program services, and video sharing platforms. I'll also mention the impact of Brexit in these areas. Then I'll conclude with a section devoted to a summary of what we can expect as a result of the recent government statement on its online harms initiative, an area which overlaps with and will eventually supersede aspects of the latest ADMS directive. At times, this will seem like a trip down memory lane with talk of European directives, the European Commission, and member states. But that's because this is an area where law and regulation of European origin remains, for the time being at least, baked in to our domestic laws. The Television Without Frontiers Directive of 1989, this was the original guise of AVMS regulation, and the clue really is in the title. It was only concerned with television broadcast services. Unsurprisingly, the words internet or online did not appear. It created a single market in television broadcast services and harmonized the laws affecting them across the EU. Some of its provisions were of limited impact in the UK because our regulatory regime was already compliant in those areas, e.g. in the protection of minors, the watershed, in advertising rules, and in providing for a right of reply. But in other respects, it was more radical, such as providing for a minimum quota of European works to be broadcast, 50% of the total, rather than simply relying on US imports, for instance. Introducing a quota for independent productions, that is, programs produced by companies independent of broadcasters. This, of course, gave rise to the birth of the now booming independent production sector. And last but not least was the establishment of the country of origin principle. This provides that TV broadcasts are only required to be licensed by and comply with the laws of the member state from which they emanate, not the country of reception. London and Ofcom, which is the regulator for all of these areas, did rather well from this. Half of all European TV services were licensed by and broadcast from the UK. As we progressed into the noughties, certain shortcomings in TWF became increasingly apparent, not least the fact that viewers were able to watch similar content on other technologies which fell outside of the scope of regulation. This led to the introduction of, next slide, AVMS 2007. This leveled the playing field by introducing regulation to a wider range of audiovisual services. Interestingly, the European Commission was at great pains to stress at the time, we are not seeking to regulate the internet. Initially, AVMS 2007 was intended to be read in conjunction with TWF 89, but in 2010, the two were consolidated into the AVMS directive of 2010. AVMS introduced a degree of regulation on providers of on-demand program services, ODPSs, or VOD services as they're more commonly known, but only if their services were TV-like, that is, competing for the same audiences as TV broadcasts and creating expectations of regulatory protection on the part of viewers. But this regulation would only apply to service providers who exercised editorial control over the choice of programs contained in their services and in its organization and presentation. In other words, it was still wedded to the age-old principle that only publishers should be liable for their content, not the platforms which were mere intermediaries for that content. That principle has been under increasing attack over the years and has finally been dispensed with in AVMS 2018 and even further in the online harms proposals. The level of content regulation introduced for VOD services was light and certainly not comparable with that for linear broadcasting. Material likely to be of serious harm to minors had to be subject to access controls, and material containing incitement to hatred based on sex, race, religion or nationality was banned. VOD services in scope were required to pre-notify to the regulator Ofcom and pay an annual fee in order to operate. And the country of origin principle was to apply equally to VOD services as to broadcast services. So notification was only required to the domestic regulator and compliance with domestic laws. As the media landscape continued to shift and evolved, and especially the proliferation of video sharing platforms for which seemingly no one accepted responsibility, the scope of AVMS regulatory regime was again expanded to respond to this gap. Next slide. In the shape of AVMS 2018, which became law at the end of last year. Why, you say? AVMS was published in 2018, and it was required to be transposed by member states by September 2020. And yet, of course, the UK had left the EU in January 2020, some 9 months earlier. However, we had committed in the Brexit transition agreement to continue to apply all EU laws throughout 2020. So we were duty bound to implement AVMS 2018. And this we did by the AVMS regulations of 2020, which took effect on the 1st of November 2020. And these, of course, have continued to apply after the end of the transition period because they are retained EU law. The key innovation was the extension of regulation to video sharing platforms. That's basically social media and video sharing platforms. It also increased the scope of VOD services. There is no longer a requirement for these to be TV-like. This means that far more VOD services will now be in scope. There's also greater protection for minors in that they must now be protected against any damaging content, not just that which is seriously harmful. But by far the most important measure was the obligation on member states to ensure that video service platform providers take appropriate measures to protect the public against damaging content appearing on their platforms. A video sharing platform is a service or dissociable section of a service, that is a distinct part of a service, where the provision of videos to the public is the principal purpose, i.e. the main activity or objective, or an essential functionality of the service, i.e. a key part of the commercial and functional value of those services. Ofcom has since issued 30 pages of guidance on what is a dissociable section, principal purpose, and essential functionality, and I don't propose elaborating further on those here. Other qualifying conditions, the term videos is expressly not limited to professionally produced content, but includes user-generated content of all descriptions. The VSP is provided by an ECN, that's an electronic communications network. This basically captures any service which is provided over the internet. The provision of such videos is on a commercial basis. That is part of a service that intends to raise revenue or profit, whether by directly from advertising or indirectly by click rates or the monetization of customer data. The person providing the service doesn't need to have any control over what videos are available, as long as they have general control over the manner in which the videos are organized, including by automatic means or even algorithms. So organizational control is sufficient. Control over selection is not necessary. Importantly, the VSB has to fall within UK jurisdiction, that is either having its sole or main establishment in the UK. Examples of VSPs would be classic social media and video sharing sites such as Facebook or YouTube, except that those aren't based in the UK, so they'll be regulated by Ofcom's equivalent in Ireland. Instead, in the UK, we're talking about the likes of TikTok, which we've all heard of since lockdown, Twitch, Imgur, Vimeo, and Snapchat. And as I say, the key point is that these services don't have editorial responsibility for their content. Services which do exercise that editorial control will likely fall within the scope of VOD services, which are subject to parallel regulation. VSPs have responsibilities in relation to content uploaded onto their services, both editorial content and advertising content, incidentally, which is quite a challenge, especially in relation to user-generated content. And they must take appropriate measures to protect under 18s from material that might harm them. That is material that might impair their physical, mental or moral development. So not just serious harm, but any harm now. And all users must be protected from material which is likely to incite violence or hatred on the grounds of protected characteristics, which is a wide category beyond gender, race, religion, and nationality. It includes orientation and disability. Also, less surprising, the general public need to be protected from criminal content such as terrorism or child sexual exploitation. And these objectives must be met by appropriate measures. There are two sources for these. Firstly, in the VSP's terms and conditions, by ensuring that these require that material not suitable for under 18s is flagged, that these contain an explicit ban on harmful material, and setting out the compliance requirements for any forms of advertising material included. Then in the functionality of the service, this covers a range of measures such as mechanisms for flagging and reporting harmful material, age verification measures, and parental controls. For those of you familiar with the e-commerce directive, the architects of this new VSP regulation have clarified two potential concerns. Firstly, that the implementation of these measures does not exclude the application of Article 14 immunity for hosting services. And secondly, that the implementation of these measures is not to be regarded as imposing a general obligation to monitor content, which would be contrary to Article 15. Rather, the VSP regime creates liability around the organization and presentation of content rather than liability for the content itself. And likewise, Ofcom's primary role is in monitoring the measures, not the individual pieces of content. The test of what's appropriate depends on several factors, such as the size and nature of the VSP and the nature of the material in question. The other implications of providing a VSP? Well, with effect from the 6th of April of this year, VSP providers have been required to notify their services to Ofcom. And with effect from next April 2022, VSPs must pay Ofcom an annual fee for the privilege of providing the VSP. Ofcom can enforce the VSP's obligations by issuing enforcement notices. That is a statutory notice requiring the VSP to do or not to do something. And if the VSP fails to comply with the enforcement notice, Ofcom can impose a financial penalty of 5% of turnover or £250,000, whichever is higher. So that's roughly on a par with the GDPR. And in serious cases, Ofcom can order the suspension or restriction of a service, and failure to comply with that would be a criminal offence. But yes, this is in fact a short story, because everything I've just said about VSPs is to be repealed on a date as yet unknown. But that's because of the overlap between these measures, which, remember, are of European origin, and the government's own proposals to regulate internet content in its Online Harms Initiative. In fact, the government had originally proposed implementing the VSP provisions as part of the online harms legislation first trailed in a 2019 white paper. However, that process got delayed for various reasons. So in order to meet the Commission's deadline, the government decided to implement the VSP measures separately on an interim and temporary basis. So when the online harms legislation is finally implemented, all of the above provisions will be repealed, and VSPs will then be regulated by the online harms regime, not under the AVMS regime. Everything I've summarised remains in full force and effect post-Brexit. It's retained EU law. But because the trade and cooperation agreement concluded between the EU and the UK on Christmas Eve doesn't cover audiovisual services, there is no freedom of movement. And this means that the country of origin principle now appears to be dead. It's no longer sufficient to rely on licensing and compliance in the country of origin. You also have to factor in the country of destination. There is, however, a partial exemption in relation to linear services. There exists a treaty called the Council of Europe Convention on Transfrontier Television of 1989. This created its own version of the country of origin principle, and it has survived Brexit because the treaty remains intact. However, seven EU member states are not signatories to the treaty, including the likes of the Netherlands and Ireland. Plus, it only applies to traditional linear TV services and thus wouldn't catch VOD services or VSPs. For those, compliance must be achieved both in the country of origin and destination, which shouldn't be a problem in the short term, but would be in the longer term if there was any significant divergence in standards of regulation. Our final section is devoted to a review of the government's proposed online harms legislation, which I've already touched upon. The story begins with the launch in April 2019 of the Online Harms White Paper and consultation in response to an increasingly perturbed public and politicians over the lack of controls and accountability for harmful content on the internet. Everything then went very quiet for 18 months, perhaps not surprisingly with Brexit and COVID to contend with, until December 2020, when the government finally published its response and its legislative proposals. The new legislation, to be called the Online Safety Bill, is due to be published later this year. The legislation will create a new statutory duty of care to make internet companies take greater responsibilities for the safety of their users. The duty is risk-based and proportionate, and as we've seen with VSPs, will focus on systems and processes rather than individual pieces of content. It's a duty upon companies in scope to take action to prevent content or activity on their services from causing significant physical or psychological harm to individuals. That's the test. Companies in scope will be those that host user-generated content, which can be accessed by users in the UK, and those which facilitate interaction between users. Therefore, it includes social media, video sharing, online forums, online marketplaces, and it also specifically includes search engines, even though these do not host content directly nor facilitate interaction between users. For these purposes, there are two basic categories of content. There's illegal content and content which, though not illegal, is harmful content. And that's in turn subcategorized into content that is harmful to children and content that is harmful to all. Then there's a categorization of companies in scope between category one and category two, according to their size, the functionalities they offer, and the potential risk of harm. Companies with the largest audiences and potential risk will be category one and the rest in category two. And there's a differential duty on each category in terms of measures required to be taken. All categories, both categories, must take action in relation to illegal content. Both must also assess the likelihood of children accessing their services, and if they are likely to, they must introduce measures to protect children from harmful material. In addition to that, companies in Category 1 must also introduce measures to protect adults from content which, whilst not illegal, is nevertheless harmful, such as trolling and abuse, misinformation, promoting self-harm, and so on. This is one of the most controversial aspects, and there has been a lot of opposition on the grounds of freedom of speech. The measures by which these objectives are to be met are similar to those laid down in the VSP regulations, terms and conditions, and functionality. Notable exclusions are it doesn't apply to B2B services, it doesn't cover journalism, reader comments on news sites, customer comments on retail sites and reviews, email or text communications. None of those are included under the Online Harms White Paper. Another big point is around territoriality. The test is mere accessibility in the UK, regardless where the service is based or directed to. It's enough purely that it can be accessed here for it to be caught. The government has decided that the regulator for the new online harms regime will be the same as for VOD and for VSPs, namely Ofcom. And therefore, the enforcement regime Ofcom will administer for online harms is similar to that for VSPs. However, the sanctions regime is potentially much stricter. Notable enhancements include a power to disrupt business activity, for instance, by directing ancillary service providers, such as advertisers, not to provide services, and in serious cases, directing ISPs to block offending sites. There's provision for eye-watering fines of up to £18 million or 10% of turnover, higher even than GDPR levels. And not immediately, but potentially further down the line, criminal sanctions against senior management. So as I say, when the Online Services Bill becomes law, The VSP legislation will be repealed and VSPs will thenceforth be subject to online harms instead. Note that the online harms regime applies to a much broader category of companies, way beyond those providing video services. And note also, as I say, about the territorial scope, accessibility being the test for that. So by way of conclusion, to sum this all up, we're witnessing a journey of ever-widening regulation to match the evolution of users' consumption of internet content. At its heart, this increasingly involves treating once immune internet intermediaries as publishers of that content. Thank you.